Welcome, dear listeners, to this week's afternoon satsang. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Arvind, and we are coming to you live from our studios at Prashanthi Nilayam. As we always say, this is Swami's lovely opportunity for us to think about him and think about his message. So the real show must always go on, and we are here to present you this week's afternoon satsang. And there are many interesting topics. We have, I should say, been a part of all of you as listeners, and we've listened to some very interesting discussions happen here. We've just been instruments. We believe that there is one more very interesting aspect about Swami's interaction with his students and devotees, and that's exactly what we're going to talk about today. And this again is an axiom, something like an aphorism which we've heard from Swami very often. But before I reveal the topic to you, we offer our most humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet before beginning this satsang. And I also take the opportunity to welcome Arvind. Sairam Arvind.
Sairam Prem, and that's indeed a kind of a tantalizing introduction that you have given to the topic. I remember reading an article written by one of our alumni brothers. Mm-hmm. The batch he graduated was 1999 to 2002. So he did his master's in chemistry, Brother Shriram. He was narrating a very interesting episode in that article.
Okay.
You know that every vacation, winter vacation or summer vacation, a lot of the students stay back because they would like to get more chances, if we can call it that way, or opportunities of physical interaction with Swami. Because statistically, the probability of a chance goes up during a vacation because most of the students are back at their homes. And so, probability-wise, you have a greater probability of getting. And Swami too, on his part, seems to, you know, reward a sacrifice like this, where somebody is sacrificing a vacation to stay with Swami. So, if he is in Vrindavan, he grants tri-sessions. And if he is in Prashanthi Nilayam or Puttaparthi, he grants what is known as the Purnachandra sessions, where all the students gather at his lotus feet in the Purnachandra auditorium, and it's a private session. And in a private session, amazing things happen, where students get opportunities to sing or speak. Swami speaks to the students. It's like an interview. It's an interaction. There are materializations. So many things happen. This was an interesting Purnachandra session where Swami was to watch a movie with the students.
Okay.
And so they were all excited. And this was a movie, I think it was called Guru Mahima or something like that. It was about the wonders and experiences and incidents related to Lord Dattatreya.
Okay.
Lord Dattatreya is known as the God in Guru form. Mm-hmm. And there is also an entire book called Guru Charitra, where all the stories of people seeking a true guru seek Dattatreya. And the methods of Lord Dattatreya are very, very strange, if I can say so, and different.
Right.
Yes, unconventional. So that is what was being shown in the movie also. It was particularly that episode where Kartavirya Arjuna, who is, famed to have had 1,000 hands and a great king, his mother advises him to seek out Guru in Dattatreya, Lord Dattatreya. And that is what is being shown in the movie, and Swami is watching this movie along with all the students. You know, it is said that it's not easy to reach the feet of a true Guru. One has to struggle. And this struggle was being portrayed in a physical manner in this movie. So Kartavirya Arjuna has to undergo so many travails, trials and tribulations in order to reach the hermitage where everyone says lives Lord Dattatreya and his disciples. But when he actually reaches this hermitage, he's in for a shock. Because what he gets first is the scent of alcohol, the scent of liquor that hits his nostrils, and he's shocked because this is not the scent that welcomes you when you reach a hermitage. You will expect aroma from incense sticks and frankincense reaching you. So he begins to wonder, did I do all this journey over tough paths and thorny bushes in order to reach this? Even as he's wondering this, he walks in, he sees all females and women over there, lecherous women there, and the person who introduces him to the Guru Dattatreya himself looks like a very hideous person, and Dattatreya, who is supposed to be the Guru, is so drunk. He is a drunk and he appears not to be in his senses, and Kartavirya Arjuna is shocked. And the first command that this Guru gives is to pick up Kartavirya Arjuna and chuck him, throw him out, literally, from the ashram. And Kartavirya Arjuna is thrown out from the ashram. I mean, the disciples hold him, lift him up, and then throw him into the slush and dirt. The students continue to watch the movie, Swami continues to watch the movie, and Kartavirya Arjuna again gets up. He is not able to believe what's happening. He thinks that everything that his mother has told him might possibly be wrong. How can this be Dattatreya? Because, you know, it is said that a guru, once he gets a disciple, more than the disciple longing for the guru longs for the disciple. And the guru keeps searching for the disciple, not only across space, but even across time. They say that the guru searches for the disciple across yugas, across lifetimes, across births. And Kartavirya Arjuna is wondering whether this is a true guru after all. Means because instead of searching for me across space and time, when I've actually reached him in space and time, he's chucking me away from his presence. But still, it is just his conviction and faith he holds on. He goes in and then he says he's thrown out again. After repeatedly he's being thrown out, he's going on coming, he's returning again and again. Then the guru says, okay, fine, if you want to stay here, you can stay here. And starts giving him all sorts of commands, all sorts of things to be done, which in no way appears to be what a guru commands a shishya to do. What a spiritual person will do. Even a materialistic man might not do some of these things, and how is this guru saying that? And there are dogs around, there are all sorts of animals in the hermitage, and it is a very, very shocking experience for Kartavirya Arjuna. But he holds on, he perseveres, and the moment he is being made to drink alcohol, he is told you should take a sip of alcohol. He agrees for that, and as he picks up alcohol, puts it on his tongue, he's in for a shock again, because it's not alcohol anymore, it's ambrosia. And when he looks around, all the lecherous women have turned into sages. And Lord Dattatreya, in his magnificence and munificence, with the forehead of Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshwara also included there. Then the cow, that traditional pose of Dattatreya, he is there granting that darshan. And that is how that, you know, scene in the movie, and the movie itself concludes. And as the movie concluded, there was silence. Swami got up from his chair. He just turned to the boys and asked for the mic. It was time for the discourse. You know, every Purnachandra session or Trai session, the grandest possible thing that can happen is Bhagwan speaking. And so Swami asked for the mic, and it was a very thrilling moment. So the movie had been stopped and mic was placed, and Swami began, not on any high note, not in any grand voice, nothing like that. Very casually Swami just said, boys, I am Dattatreya. And remember, test is my taste. That was the first statement from Swami, and I feel this is a statement that we should first enshrine when we come to Swami, that test is his taste, because in that statement is hidden grand secrets and very, very subtle but profound truths which will help us in our spiritual journey. Test is my taste. And that's why, dear listeners, we have taken that up as a topic for today.
Indeed, listeners, so that's the topic we're going to be talking on, test is his taste. And in a sense, the reason why we thought of this test is, in India, this is the time we all go through our examinations, this is the time we all take our exams after a year-long study, and, you know, some of these important exams also happen in this time of the year, that is your school leaving exams and your entrance into universities which you are looking to enter, those exams. So, invariably, you know, Arvind, I've always thought of it. Somebody asked me once, what is... I think each of us have something like a recurring nightmare. Even after so many years, we would be still having that nightmare. And for me, one of those nightmares is waking up in the middle of the night, sweating, thinking that I'm going in for an exam underprepared.
Oh.
Or going in with the wrong paper, for the wrong exam.
That is a common theme in many of my scary dreams, many of my nightmares, where it is a mathematics exam, and I have gone into the examination hall prepared for a language exam or say a science exam. So that is definitely a recurrent theme of my nightmares, being unprepared for an exam. And I think, as you say rightly, many have this fear of facing an exam, of being unprepared for an exam. And why? Even if you are prepared for the test or exam, there is that nervousness and fear as to whether you will succeed or not.
Right. So I think it's universal in the sense when you're going to be tested with something, you're going to be assessed or you're going to be judged, based on your performance on one particular day, because that's how it happens. Because most of us, I've seen many of my classmates who would be good students, but they don't have the nerves to go through that exam, you know. At that point, when a question is asked, you don't actually, you know, come out as good as you would have done. I mean, you would have always seen that boy or girl as a bright student in class, but you won't see them performing in an exam. So it's clearly that the tension which an exam brings becomes a very big part. It plays a very big part in one's, at least academic career.
I also remember, you know, my math teacher telling me, mathematics is a subject where you can get 100 out of 100, a full mark. And I always thought that I should have at least one such full mark in a public examination. And I always wanted to get that. But it had kept evading me. And finally, the last chance that I got to do that, when I had that opportunity, I had prepared so thoroughly. I had gone through everything. And when I went to the examination also, I felt that I had done everything right. But I remember even as the exam got over and I walked out of the hall, I jubilantly went to my maths teacher and told him that, you know, I have done great. I think that 100 is on the cards now. 100 on 100. He told me, you see, up to 90 is what you can say with your efforts. But that last 10 marks, because there are marks for the steps, marks for writing the formula, mark, there are different ways in which marks are allotted. At least in India, that's how it is. So he said that 100 is not in your hands, only up to 90 is in your hands. And true to his word, you know, again, I don't think I'll ever have a chance of scoring 100 in mathematics in my life, because in that exam I didn't get 100 again. So it goes to show that it's not only as if that people who are a little weak in academics will feel that. I felt that I'm pretty good at academics, but I would still be tense before every examination, because there is that uncertainty that the results that come will not be commensurate to the efforts that you have put in. You might have put in the efforts which deserve 100, but your results don't give you 100, while at the same time you'll see some others. You know, there are some others for whom it's a bumper joy, because they would have hardly expected to pass the exam and suddenly they get 50 out of 100 and they're so thrilled. So there's this definitely this uncertainty element in tests and exams that we write, where you won't get results commensurate to your effort, and that definitely brings in a lot of trepidation.
And efforts have to be in on different counts too, because I remember some of my teachers saying that before you go to an exam, pray well, and you know, because you never know, the person who's correcting your exam should be in good mood when he's correcting your paper, because even all that matters. If he or she is in a very good mood, small mistakes might be overlooked, and you know, that is the time when the examiner might see the effort. You know, you might have got the answer wrong, but you said you're in the right direction, so it gives you an extra mark for the step than the answer. So all these things would. So much of uncertainty in how it can happen. And that's something which causes a lot of tension. But when we come to a test, when you're talking of Swami, as you said, when Swami said, I'm Dattatreya and I enjoy testing. And how do we understand that? And that's what we're going to try to see. And why a fear in the tests which we face with Swami is misplaced and, in fact, has no sense at all. That is what we'll have to come to. The conclusion at the end of it, I think.
Like as we discussed just now, Prem, the cause for fear when we write a test or an exam is because of that uncertainty factor. What if I don't produce a result that I'm capable of? And this is a fear that exists among everyone, you know. And it's not only for a written examination, a singing competition. How many times in India at least we see these shows where a singer is slated to be the best and nobody has any doubts as to he or she will win the contest. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to that performance day, there are so many fears. What if my throat goes bad? What if I don't sing because of the nervousness or the tension? So many things can happen because, and as you said, the exam or test depends on that day. And therein lies a very, very big difference between Swami's tests and the worldly tests. This is what I feel, that in the worldly tests, we are judged based on the results that we produce. If our results are bad, we are condemned as bad and no good. If the results are good, then we are told it's great. So recognition of the efforts seems to somehow be missing. Though there is a correlation between efforts and results, you know, more efforts you put in, more likely that you'll get good results. But there are chances where you put in efforts and you don't come out on tops. Or there are chances where you don't put in efforts and you can come out on tops. So while the world judges our tests and examination based on the results that we produce, there's a difference, because God judges us not based on the results that we produce, but on the efforts that we put in. I feel that is one very important difference that should actually prevent us from getting disheartened, because in Swami's tests, it's not the results we produce that matter, but the efforts that we have put in.
Absolutely. I think it comes from, you could say, the confusion that we feel that results always reflect the efforts perfectly.
Hmm.
No, the exam is also meant to actually judge the efforts. The exam is meant to judge the learning process.
Hmm.
No, that's why they say you're only cheating yourself if you cheat in an exam. That's what the teachers would always tell us, because the idea is for you to see whether you've learned the lessons properly. So what it means is, in the worldly sense, we believe that the result is a perfect reflection and a perfect picture of the effort that you've done. But it need not necessarily be so, because as we spoke, the result is based on so many factors which are beyond our control. And that is why when it comes to Swami, he knows that what the whole process is meant for is to see whether you're learning the lessons, you're putting the efforts. So that's where the results actually don't matter at all. And most times the results would be exaggerated. You know, when we would see during some of these sports meets and all that, Swami would come and say that the boys are flying at 30,000 feet and 40,000 feet, or, you know, the achievement would be so much exaggerated, because from Swami's point of view, he has already acknowledged the effort. He has already rewarded the effort. And that is why it doesn't matter whether there is a slight variation in the representation of the result also.
You know, when you said about Swami exaggerating a result, when it is done independently, when Swami comes and says that these boys did great, you may say that Swami is factoring an additional 80% or an additional 200% to add on to their result. But you know, when two contrasting situations appear, like it happened once, there were these exams that had just concluded, and Swami came out talking to the students. He was speaking to the students, and Swami began to ask for marks. He asked, how much did you get? How much did you get? He was asking, and one particular bright student was asked what was his marks. I don't know, remember the specifics, but it was quite high, maybe 90%, 91%. When he said that he had got 90 or 91%, Swami said, you should put in more efforts. Not good. You should do better. So that was what Swami said. And, you know, immediately we can conclude that this is Swami, the perfectionist, who always strives for the ultimate, who is not happy with anything less than the ideal. So even as one is thinking this, Swami then picks up another boy. And now this boy is somewhere in the bottom of the class in academics. And even as he's picked, there is like a silent groan. Everybody is thinking, Swami, if you're not happy with that boy, there is no way you're going to be happy with this boy. You know, because he's in the bottom of the class. And then Swami asks him, how much marks did he get? And he says, again, I don't remember the specifics, but something like 63, 64% maybe. And as he says that, Swami says, very good, very happy. Pats him on the back, gives him Padma Namaskar. This looks like, you know, when both are pitted against each other, this looks very strange. Here is Swami not appreciating a 93%, and here is Swami appreciating a 63%. It's almost like, Swami, this is percentage, this is not ranks. It's not that 63 is better than 93. See, here also, we judge the students, we judge the boys, we judge everybody based on the results. A 93% guy is definitely much better than a 63% guy. That's all it is. That's all it is for us. It is so easy to pick. But that's the beauty with God's tests. That's the beauty with Swami, you know, because Swami sees beyond the results. He sees the efforts that have been put in. For all that we know, the 93% boy is possibly capable of 96%. He has just taken it a little easy, and he knows that irrespective of how hard he studies, he's anyway going to top the class. So why bother? On the other hand, the 63% boy is possibly only a 55% boy. And he has logged and put in a lot of effort because he wants to do well, and he has put in that effort and he has increased it by 10%. And It is that delta, that percentage change that Swami sees. Here it is plus 10%. There it is actually minus 3%. And so since Swami sees the effort, I feel, you know, this is the reason why it is said that all are equal in the eyes of God. I used to often wonder, how can all be equal, Swami? How can you love everyone equally? For example, when we used to see Swami enjoying singing, I used to always feel that the singers have a big advantage over me, because they can definitely sing much better than me and they can make Swami happier, because I know Swami is a Ganapriya. Mad bhakta yatra gayanti tatra tishtami narada. That's what he said. So how can I ever please you, Swami? It is incidents like this, possibly if there is time, I'll narrate one more later on, where Swami clearly shows that for me, it is the efforts that matter. And that is why I am equal to, say, a Lata Mangeshkar. Because a Lata Mangeshkar, she might sing so much better than me. But if I can put in as much effort as she puts in, God will appreciate me as much as He appreciates her. Haven't we seen that happening in Mandir Prem, where singers of different level, different categories and different levels of achievement have received appreciation from Swami? We have seen not so good singers receive appreciation and praise, and some of the big names actually not receive much attention. All this we have seen. Without judging anybody, one thing becomes very clear is that with God, it's not the results that we produce that matter, it's the efforts that we put in that matters, and that should actually give us joy and confidence, because though results are not in our hand, though results lead to uncertainty and fear, efforts definitely are in our hand, and efforts are a certainty that we can put in. And since we are going to be judged on our efforts, it is something to cheer about.
Exactly. You know, what you said was completely true, but along with efforts, when we speak about singers, the aspect of feelings come in. I think when you say efforts, I think the feelings with which the efforts put in also have a lot of weightage. I'm reminded of one incident, I think we might have narrated it before, but nevertheless it's perfect here, where one of the students were given an MBA seat after his, I think, MCOM or something. Swami was very keen that he join the MBA course. So Swami spoke to the Vice Chancellor, and of course he wrote the entrance and all that, and Swami insisted that he should be part of the MBA program. I think this was the first year the MBA was starting. So the Vice Chancellor was not very keen, the Registrar was not very keen. They said, Swami, he's not very intelligent academically. You know, he was a very good singer and all that, but Swami, they said, Swami, academics, he's not very bright. It would be good if we have the first batch and second batch of MBAs, you know, the toppers of the classes. So that would be a good way to start the new course. Swami said, no, I want this boy to be there. So eventually he became one of the students in the MBA course. And the first, I think, CIEs or mid-semesters, whatever was the format then, came out, and he did terribly in the exams. So the results went to Swami. Swami was very keenly waiting for the results and saw this boy's results. So that day Swami called this boy. Okay, and very interesting way Swami cornered him, literally cornered him, because that corner between the interview room door and the bhajan hall door, you know, that's where Ritchim Swami called him, and Swami literally put him to that corner, faced him, and very, very close, looked at him directly, and Swami said, what have you done in your exams? So he said, Swami, I can't study. I've never been a good student. And Swami said, why have you got such low marks? So he said, Swami, I couldn't study. Then Swami calls him inside the interview room, and Swami tells him, see, I always tell this one thing to all my students, that I don't want marks. Just ensure that you don't get any remarks. Okay, Swami said, but today I'm going to tell something different. Swami looked at him and said, I want marks. Will you give me? Okay. And before saying this, Swami said, I want one thing from you, will you give me? So this boy was so moved when Swami said, you know, with a pleading voice, Swami is asking, I want something, will you give me? He said, Swami, anything for you, Swami. You just ask, anything for you. Then Swami said, I want marks. Will you give me marks? And this boy, with confidence, he said, Swami, just watch out for the next exams. You know, with that confidence, he said, Swami, just watch out for the next exams. And needless to say, this boy worked really hard, cracked the next exams. I think he got an O grade or something like that. And that day when results came, the results were taken to Swami. And Swami literally burst out of the interview room, and Swami said, this boy has got first rank. But actually he had not got the first rank. He had just got an O grade. He had, you know, gone into the O grade
top category.
Top category. But he had not got a first rank or anything. But Swami came out, and Swami walked up and down the corridor saying that this boy has got the first rank. You know, that's what I said. According to Swami, Swami has ranked his effort as the first rank. You know, his results might talk a different story, maybe it's a good result, but not the best result. But Swami is seeing the effort, because the effort was the best effort. Swami has given him the best rank already.
Beautiful, Prem. Now I am tempted to just narrate another little incident regarding this only.
Sure.
This was an episode that happened sometime in 2007 or 2008, I think. A drama was being put up by the devotees from Uttaranchal and Uttarakhand.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a dream that afternoon when I slept after lunch. In the dream, I saw Swami manifesting two gold chains.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm facing him, and he's manifesting it for somebody who is behind me. And apparently he's watching a drama. So Swami says, very good, very happy. And I just know that two members who have participated in the drama are going to get gold chains, which Swami has materialized right in front of me. So that was the end of the dream. And I woke up because my cell phone was ringing. And my cell phone was ringing because it was one of my colleagues calling me, telling me that Arvind, some stage is being put up in Kulwant Hall. I guess there is a program today. And that is how Uttarakhand program had come into being. You know, those days, every state that used to come for Seva or as a Parthi Yatra would come ready with a program, and they will pray to Swami for an opportunity to present in His presence. You know, it would be in doubt. You don't know whether Swami will, you will be here for about 3-4 days, whether Swami will permit you to put it on the first day or second day, you don't know. Any day the call might come, and this had come suddenly, the call. And so they were getting the stage ready in a hurry. That evening, as I sat and watched the program, I don't remember the date now, but it was a drama based on Swami's, the revelation that Swami made during the Guru Purnima 1963 discourse about why He is Shiva Shakti, about the story of sage Bharadwaja. That's right? Bharadwaja,
right.
How he was in a...
He gets a stroke.
A paralytic stroke,
right.
And Parvati doesn't bother about it, and therefore the Parvati half of Swami's body has to suffer the same stroke. Now when this was being depicted, so there was a Shiva and Parvati who came and did the Tandavam dance. And when I looked at it, it looked quite bad. It didn't look professional. It didn't look very nice. And I could see, I started, you know, giggling at the moves they were making because it was not looking good. And I noticed that not only me, there were several others also who were actually laughing at them. These children were making themselves a laughing stock by their below par performance. Even as I was laughing within myself, I was not laughing aloud because I was sitting right next to Swami. I just happened to look at Swami, and Swami was so intensely watching the whole thing, and I was amazed. I was amazed as to how can somebody watch this with so much intensity, because it is so amateurish and so below par. And then, you know, it was like a flash of lightning. Something hit me within, and this voice started coming that, you know what, Swami is going to materialize two chains, not one. Usually if a program is nice and we feel Swami has enjoyed, Swami materialized a ring or chain for somebody in the drama. And because of the dream that I had seen just an hour or so before, something is telling me that Swami is going to materialize two chains.
Mm-hmm.
I said, oh my God, oh yeah. Oh my God, what if Swami is going to do it for this drama? Two chains. What if it was a indication for me to be ready? And I remember Silesh sir was sitting by my side. I just called him and said, sir, everybody is laughing at the drama. But Silesh sir, you know, he was very sincere. He said, let them laugh. Swami is enjoying it. I said, sir, Swami is enjoying it so much that I think he will give two chains. He said, what makes you think like that? I said, no, Swami told me. And that's where our conversation ended. And as I was shooting the drama, I remember as the drama concluded, Swami called two characters front. And I felt, oh my God, this is the moment. I started to separate the video camera from the stand because I wanted to get into a better position to shoot it. Because if Swami was going to materialize the chain and these people come to receive the chain from him, they will be blocking the camera. So I wanted to go to the other side. And even as I am removing the camera, Swami looks at me and says, you are going to cover this, right? He's asking me whether I will be shooting that. I said, yes, Swami, that's why I am removing the camera. Swami smiled and then waved his hand, and out came two chains, Prem. You know, I was so thrilled. On the face of it, the primary lesson here appears that whatever Swami tells in your dream is as true as what Swami does in real life, because there's no difference between that. There's another more powerful and important lesson here. The lesson as to how Swami is able to enjoy the children's program. Later on, I got to know that these were children from underprivileged sections of the society, and they had practiced so hard for months to put up. It's just that, you know, you cannot compare them with some of the others who have better facilities and who have better upbringing in terms of exposure to acting and such things. So I had been very harsh in my judgment. But then, here was Swami showing that Swami does not judge the performance. He does not judge the results that you produce, but the efforts that you have put in. What they did on that day, possibly I can do it even without any practice. But then will Swami appreciate it? No, because Swami will expect something grander from me. That is because I am capable of greater efforts. I have not put in efforts. I am just using my skill. And that's why, you know, I remember the six qualities that are dear to Lord Krishna. It is said, Utsaham, Sahasam, Dhairyam, Buddhi, Shakti, Parakramam. Parakrama is special skills, special ability. Special skill and special ability is placed last. What is first is Utsaham, eagerness, your readiness to put in effort. That is rank number one. And the last rank is your skill and special abilities. So, that is why I feel, you know, we have to be cheerful and happy, because in the test that the Lord puts us to, it doesn't matter what result we produce for the Lord. But what matters is how sincere and how steadfastly we are putting in efforts. And efforts are totally in our hand. You, me, a lame person, a deaf person, a blind person, a mentally challenged person, anybody. All of us are equal in our ability to put in our 100%. So all that we need to do is put in our 100%. And that is why it is beautiful in the tests that the Lord puts, because it's totally based on effort.
Another reason why we can actually and should look forward to Swami's tests, you know, if you think of it, in an academic year, if you look at it, you know, some people might be able to learn a lesson in, say, a semester, a month or so. But some people might need a longer time to learn it, a concept which is very complex in physics or something like that. We might need to do more practice and need more efforts. But the academic year does not wait for everybody. You know, March end is the exam for everybody. Whether you're a slow learner, you're a fast learner, you can learn the lessons, you know, midway of the year. You still have to wait till March to write your exam.
The time duration is fixed.
It's fixed. You have to take the exam when the exams are on. But when it comes to your tests with Swami, I think invariably, if you're being put through a test, it means you're ready for it. Swami does not catch us unaware. We sometimes feel that we are unprepared for it. We feel that, you know, Swami, why are you giving me this test? I don't think I can, you know, go through it. But I feel with Swami, if you are being given a test, it means you're prepared for it and it means you're up to it.
Exactly. Swami does not subject an 8th grade student to a 12th grade exam. And if you're progressing fast, God does not wait for the academic year to complete to give you the test. He'll immediately give you a test. And I think rather than we speak about it, Swami so beautifully says the same thing in this discourse that he delivered on the 25th of December, the Christmas day in 1998.
Prahlad is not.
Here is Prahlad.
Prahlad is chinna baludu.
Prahlad is tiny
toy. Tani chinna baludu ainappudikini daivajnam yematram kuda ullanginchukunda.
Though he was so young, he never
disobeyed.
He was unmindful of the
difference.
He was chanting the name of Narayana all the time.
As he surrendered to Narayana, Narayana had
taken care of him. He was thrown from the
mountain top.
He repeated Narayana's name. There he was protected.
He
was thrown into the ocean. There also he chanted
Narayana's name.
The waves have taken the form of
Narayana.
Was bitten by snake. Poison has become nectar. All periods of time when he was facing difficulties, he was chanting the name of
Narayana. Sarvada, Sarvakalesho, Sarvatra, Harichintanam, Nirantaram Kudunu, Daivachintan Chestunte, Daivasarupani Pundutamanam.
So we'll certainly assume the form of God when we think of God all the time.
Everywhere.
Never be depressed that you can't bear
it.
God will never put you to suffering that you cannot bear
it.
He will give you difficulties that you can bear. You may feel, God, I am facing difficulties that I can't bear. If anyone asks you, since when you are finding the problems for the last 3 years?
You could bear the suffering all the 3 years, then what? You can face the problem. So God is putting you to the test that you can bear. Test is the taste of God. We should never fear any test.
దైవ చింతనలో మన ప్రాణం అయినప్పుడు సరే అర్పితం గావిస్తూ రావాలి.
బి రెడీ టు సాక్రిఫైస్ యువర్ లైఫ్ యాజ్ యూ థింక్ ఆఫ్ గాడ్.
ఆ విధమైనటువంటి ఒక దీనికి వచ్చినప్పుడే దైవత్వం ఎన్నైనప్పుడు అన్ని విధాల ప్రాపులాడి మిమ్మల్ని రక్షిస్తూ వస్తాడు.
వెన్ యూ కమ్ టు ద స్టేజ్ గాడ్ విల్ హెల్ప్.
దట్ వాజ్ ఎ క్లిప్ అండ్ యు నో వెరీ పవర్ఫుల్లీ వెరీ స్ట్రాంగ్లీ స్వామి ఈస్ పుట్టింగ్ దట్ ఇఫ్ యూఆర్ బీయింగ్ పుట్ త్రూ టెస్ట్ యూ బీయింగ్ పుట్ త్రూ దాట్ ఓన్లీ బికాస్ యూ క్యాన్ అఫోర్డ్ టు గో త్రూ ఇట్ అండ్ యూఆర్ రెడీ ఫర్ ఇట్. This is a very, very important point, Arvind, because many times when we go through some very difficult situations in life and you can see that Swami's guidance or help is not so forthcoming, you don't see it so obviously happening in your life. You're going through a health crisis, you're going through a financial crisis, you don't see Swami's helping hand so obviously, and we tend to look at Swami as a sadist. You know, are you enjoying putting me through this thing? The very fact that, you know, when Swami says that if you're being put through a test, which means God has the confidence that you're ready for it. You know, that takes out that sadism angle from that. It is like, you could say, a coach who is putting his best athlete through a test, which he believes that the athlete can go through, and he is waiting for him to actually conquer it and come out of it.
More than a coach-athlete example, it is perfect. But in the case of an athlete, he just misses out on possibly a race. I feel God's tests are more basic because it's like, I was watching this program the other day on National Geographic and it was about a cheetah, a mother cheetah who has just given birth to 3 cubs and she is feeding the cubs every day. So one day, one fine morning, you know, she just leaves the 3 cubs and walks away. Till this day, she has been there closely guarding them, protecting them. In one case, you know, when they happen to stray into lion territory, when a lion attacks, a lion is 4 times the size of a cheetah. And the mother is ready to take on an animal 4 times its size just to defend her cubs. She does that. There's no doubt that she really cares for the cubs. She loves the cubs and, you know, whatever animal way that is possible. But then this fine day she walks away and the cubs are hungry. And there's nobody to feed them and the mother doesn't return at all. It so happened that they venture out and they try to hunt. They are not experienced. They have been on the hunt along, but always it's their mother who has done the final blow. They have just got a habit of running along with her and some practice hunts, that's all. But this time when they're faced with the real test, it takes them a lot of struggle. And I feel if I am the cub at that moment, I'll just wonder as to why my mother has deserted me, because now I won't be able to get food. It's actually that desperation that makes these 3 cubs finally go and hunt down a deer. They hunt down their own deer and after that they feel so strong and bold because they know that they don't need the physical presence of their mother by their side. And that's it, the mother never returns to them physically. And they also don't go back to her because they have become independent. See, the beautiful thing I feel over here is, how does the mother cheetah know when is the right time to just leave them? Because if she leaves them little earlier, they're going to die of starvation. If she leaves them later, they possibly will have passed the age where they can learn how to hunt. That perfect timing that is inbuilt, if a mother cheetah knows that, doesn't the creator of that mother cheetah know a thing or two more than the mother cheetah about timing? Doesn't he know when to time the things to perfection? It is in such perfect situation that we are strong enough to overcome that situation. At the same time, we are receptive enough to receive all the lessons and messages and the learning that that experience is going to give us, which will help us progress in our spiritual journey, the ultimate journey of life.
Reminded of what one of the speakers, I think it was Rangarajan, said, mentioned in front of Swami, and it was such an experience to sit there and see Swami kind of enjoying that example and acknowledging it in that means. You know, there was an example of a disciple going to his master and saying that why he is going through difficulties in life, and he doesn't see the care of the master, and you know, divinity seems to have abandoned him? That's the question. And the master tells him that you go and spend a day with a goldsmith. Then you'll know the ways of the master. You'll know the ways of God. So this man goes, and it's a very weird directive to him. But he goes and spends the day with a goldsmith. So he observes what the goldsmith does. And we all know what he does. You know, he throws the gold into the fire. So the first thing he asks is, gold is so precious, why do you throw it into fire? Something which we like and something which is dear to us, none of us would, you know, throw it into fire. He says the gold is so expensive, and that's the, you know, the thing which earns you your daily bread. Why are you throwing it into fire? He says, this is the only way I can make it purer. I have to put it through fire. So that's the first lesson he gets it. So then the second thing he says is, as long as this gold is in the fire, I have to give it all my attention. You know, the gold is lying in the room in the form of the raw gold. I can just leave it and go ahead with my other works. But when I put it in the fire, that's the time it needs my 100% attention. So when I put it in the fire, I am absolutely focusedly watching over it. So he says that's the second lesson he gets. And then he asks, how long will you keep it in the fire? So he says, I will put it in the fire till the time I'm convinced that when I take it out, I can see my image on it. And he says, that's the third lesson. And that is when he realizes that this is the very process which, you know, God puts us through. That's the very process Swami put all of us through. And it's a very beautiful thought that when we are going through the test, when you're going through that examination, is the time when you're getting the maximum attention from God. And that is where devotion and love for Swami makes, you know, plays the biggest part. How many times you've heard Swami telling that prayer that Kunti made to, you know, Lord Krishna? Because she said, when asked, what do you want? She says, give me more troubles, because that's the time when I think of you so much. And I think instinctively we know that when we are, when our thoughts are 100% focused on God, that's when God is actually watching over us completely.
The problem is, in this, one has to experience this in order to believe it. On the face of it, when you look at all these devotees of God, say Mirabai for example, we know that Mirabai is greatly devoted to God, and we know that she has gone through so much of suffering in her life. And that was what was asked of Swami once in Kodaikanal also. Swami, you say Mirabai took the Lord's name and she was having devotion and faith in Krishna always. But why is it that she suffered so much then? And Swami asked back, did she tell you that she suffered? Did Mirabai tell you that she suffered? You are assuming that she suffered. That's because you are not experienced. You know, Mirabai, when given a choice between giving up taking Krishna's name or drinking poison, she chose to drink poison, which means the name of Lord Krishna gave her that much of peace, strength, security, joy. That was the kind of joy, peace, strength and security that she was living in. We don't realize that. So therefore, we just make a kind of a sweeping statement. We paint a broad canvas with a brush saying that all those who are dear to God will be subjected to suffering. Therefore, better not try to go dear to God. We don't realize that they appear to be suffering in the eyes of the world. They are themselves so calm, peaceful and in a kind of joy that none of us can ever dream of reaching in the worldly sense. That is why it is said that everybody in the world is mad. Some are intoxicated by the world, some are intoxicated by God. And for the God intoxicated person, the world intoxicated person appears mad. For the world intoxicated person, the God intoxicated person appears mad. But then Swami has said, of all the madnesses that afflict man, God madness is the least harmful and the most beneficial. I think we should put our faith in that statement and therefore be ready and in fact be happy if we are in a testing period, because it shows that, as you said, one thing, that God is always having his focus on us in that moment of time. Second, it shows that we must definitely be progressing. That is why we are being made to give the test. And the third thing is, unlike the worldly tests where the tests are put to evaluate how good you are, God does not need to evaluate us. Each test that we are subjected to is a kind of an self-evaluation. It is more so for us to know where we stand and what our worth is. Possibly we can take that up after a little break. Dear listeners, we will continue the discussion on how test is his taste, how we can also relish the same taste, but that will be after this break. Enjoy the song. On the other side of the song, we'll be back with the further discussion.
Oh. मन में अब आग लगी है, तेरे दर्शन की प्यास लगी है, प्यासे नैना मन में अब आग लगी है, तेरे दर्शन की प्यास लगी है। ढूंढूं कहां तुम्हें ये तो बता दो, ढूंढो कहाँ, ढूंढो कहाँ, मंदिर में तुम, मस्जिद में तुम, काशी में तुम, काबा में तुम, ढूंढो कहाँ, ढूंढो कहाँ, ढूंढो कहाँ, मन में
Welcome back, dear listeners. We are discussing the topic, Swami's tests are his taste. And as we just made a remark just before going into that song break, one major difference between the tests which we face in our everyday life and examinations or maybe even the appraisal tests which you take in your professional life and the tests which Swami gives. And I think this is something which would always occur to us even as, you know, we would go through the tests. That Swami, after all, knows our worth. You know, why would Swami want to test us? Swami always knew what we are good at, and as, you know, Swami said in that discourse clip, that when God gives you a test, He knows exactly how much you can put up with it, and that's how much He will give you. So God always knows our worth, then why test at all? Right? That's the question which always comes to our mind.
Exactly. And that is where this important difference comes in, where all of God's tests are for our own evaluation. I often feel Swami testing us is like Swami holding up a mirror in front of us. You know, you just see it, you don't like it, so you know what you have to change then. You don't like your hairstyle, then take a comb, pick it up and do it. You don't like boil on your skin, then take something and apply some cream over there. Basically, it's just a mirror. It just shows us what we are. So, it's nothing to be scared of because it's just a reflection of our own inner being. Nothing else. A reflection of the inner being is what God's test is all about. And therefore, it is not that we are doing anything to prove to anybody else. It's to our own, as you rightly said, Swami already knows what we are worth. So, it's not as if He is interested to know how worthy we are or how good we are. It is His way of communicating to us that this is how you are. This is your mark sheet. This is where you are. Otherwise, we just don't get to know. You know, in times of happiness, there's one famous Hindi song that goes as "Dukh mein sumiran sab kare, sukh mein kare na koi," which means in times of distress, everybody thinks of God. In times of happiness, nobody thinks of God. That is why, you know, we have all these quotes which say failure is a stepping stone to success. It is the hardships where you don't learn things in pleasure. Na sukhat labhyate sukham. Swami also says, you know, from joy you don't get joy. It is only from painful times that true joy arises. That is why Swami says, na sukhat labhyate sukham. So, this test is something that we should take as a way of evaluating our own selves. It is a time for us to pause, ponder, see where we have come, where we want to head to, and then do any correction in our course direction if necessary, and go ahead.
Yeah, it's a very important point, especially that Hindi Doha which you quoted, which means we always, whenever we talk of tests, whenever we talk of Swami testing us, we're talking about testing times. We're talking about difficulties coming our way. But actually, even happiness can be a test.
Exactly.
Right? Even success can be a test. At the point of success, are you able to be humble? Are you able to give up that doership and say that, you know, it just happened through me. It did not happen because of me. I think that's a very strong test, and that's a test which most of us might actually slip at. You know, more than, we all know that when you're troubled, you're supposed to pray to Swami, but are we able to give him the credit when it's due?
No, look at it this way, Prem. Success is also a test where we often fail because we indulge in the success. And failure is a test actually that we succeed more often.
Right.
So God is so loving that he gives us the test that we perform well in. Basically, we don't notice, we don't focus, we don't get our priorities right when things appear to be going fine from a worldly point of view. I remember an incident, a beautiful episode, I think I've narrated it so many times, I don't mind narrating it again, happened to my classmate Jagdish Chandra, where he was taken to Chennai to accompany Swami for the Atirudra Mahayagnam. He was selected as a speaker there. On the night before the speech, Swami had asked him what he's talking about, what is his topic going to be, and he had said that he was going to speak on the topic Guru. Because he said that Swami is my Guru, Swami asked, if any doubts are there, I'll clear it for you. He asked Swami, what's the meaning of Sharanagati or surrender? And Swami asked him, you tell me, what do you mean by surrender? So Jagdish then said, Swami, surrender means to offer everything to Swami. Then Swami said, see, God does not need anything from you. Coming to the point straight, Swami told him that surrender is the ability to always tell oneself that this is good for me, irrespective of what happens. Whether good or bad, what happens in life, just keep calm, close your eyes and say, this is good for me. This will help you to remain grounded and humble when success comes. This will help you to remain cheerful and not get disheartened when failure comes. It helps you remain equanimous. And, you know, as we said, that is what is meant by passing the test. That is to remain equanimous and cheerful. So Swami said, this is what surrender is. Did you understand? He said, yes, Swami. The next day, Jagdish gives a speech, and the speech is a tremendous success. Everyone applauds. But during the dining session, when he's expecting Swami to give him accolades, Swami comes and just bursts his bubble by saying, the speech was bad.
Mm-hmm.
And because Swami says this, everyone else also joins in and says, yes, Swami, he could have done better, and it would have been a much better thing if he had had a little more humility, possibly. He could, basically, all kind of criticism. And now Jagdish, when he heard this, he felt so sad, so upset. And he felt, why is Swami testing me like this? Swami is supposed to love me the most in the universe. A person who loves me the most will privately scold me and publicly laud me, applaud me. Swami is doing the opposite. I consider him as the most loving being for me in the universe, but privately he congratulated me, he spoke to me, he blessed me. Publicly, he's humiliating me. Why is Swami testing me like this? So he was upset. He was definitely upset. He stopped eating. He didn't feel like eating his food. And then Swami comes in the lines. Adding salt to the wound, Swami then says, I told him about Sharanagati, but he went and spoke about Guru.
Mm-hmm.
And now Jagdish felt that this is a new accusation. Swami, you never told me to speak about Sharanagati. You just explained to me about Sharanagati, that is surrender. I told you clearly I am speaking about Guru. So why are you making a fuss about that? So this added on, and as Swami came in the lines, on the wheelchair, he was being pushed around, and when Swami came near Jagdish, Jagdish is refusing to look at Swami in the eye because he's upset with Swami. And Swami is speaking something to him, and Jagdish is already ready. He is thinking that Swami is going to ask him, why are you so upset? And he is ready with his answer, but he is taken aback with what Swami asks him. Swami asks him, what happened to your surrender, sir? And then in a flash, Jagdish realizes, oh my God, Swami had said that whether you are happy or sad, always tell yourself that this is good for me and remain cheerful, calm and peaceful. And Swami had even asked him, did you understand? And he had nodded his head vigorously saying, yes Swami, I understood. But right now in the first opportunity, he had failed. You know, after that what happened is beautiful, because he got up, ran, sat on his knees and told Swami, Swami, I'm sorry, forgive me. Swami then patted him on his cheek and said, you spoke very well. You know. So, that was a beautiful conclusion. But then, what Swami did, see, it was not as if Swami wanted to put Jagdish to trouble or Swami wanted to check whether Jagdish has learnt. Swami knows the reality. Swami was just holding a mirror. He was holding a mirror. That's what he did when he asked Jagdish, what happened to your surrender, sir? Otherwise, you know, as far as Jagdish was concerned, he felt he understood. He told Swami that I understood. That is what anyone of us would have done. We would have felt that we have understood what it is, and possibly, just like I am parroting that experience again and again, all of us would have parroted that to everybody else. But it is only in these little tests, little things, that Swami holds out a mirror so that we can evaluate ourselves truly, so that we are not hypocritical about our own progress.
Very true, you know. When we come to Swami, this is seen many times, you know, we see Swami, we love Swami. But unless an opportunity is given, we really cannot explore for ourselves, do we really love Swami? You know, that is why it is important, and that is why we spoke about the prayer of Kunti or the Pandavas, you know, Swami would speak so many times about them. Their adherence to Dharma actually stood out only because of the testing times they were put through. And even then when they could hold on to it. And I think that would have been more than anybody else a confidence booster to themselves that they were actually good, and that was the goodness which was drawing Krishna to them. You know, it gave them that opportunity to discover, and that's many times I've always felt it. Once I was talking to somebody who was actually going through a lot of troubled times in their life, I said, you know, I can talk to you about surrender, but Swami is giving you an opportunity to actually tell yourself that you have surrendered. You know, because that is more valuable than even speaking about it, and I can quote 100 devotees' experiences and discourses and tell you that this is what surrender is. But this is the best opportunity that Swami has given for you to actually live surrender. And if we are able to see tests of Swami as an opportunity to live what we've always prophesized, our take on it will be completely different, and I think that's what Swami wants us to do. Dear listeners, we're going to take another short break. I think we've taking another break very shortly, but this break is for featuring something which is very special, and the Radio Sai team is very happy to humbly offer to all of you, humbly offer at Swami's lotus feet, this instrumental bhajan. And instrumental bhajan is always very close to our hearts, because even as we feasted on Swami's darshan, this was the music which used to float by, and it's like that, you know, the Pablo experiment. When you hear something, the memories that triggers off, parallel to what you've experienced that before. And that's what happens. And dear listeners, we bring to you this special instrumental bhajan. We're going to play this for you at the end of this. We will continue and probably conclude this discussion.
Oh,
continuing along with our discussion, we were just speaking about how all of Swami's tests are for our own self-evaluation. You know, because Swami knows everything, that He does not need to test us to evaluate us. It is only for us to know our own worth. Another important reason that we should not fear God's tests is because, you know, I remember this WhatsApp forward that I got. Mm-hmm. It said that when you squeeze an apple, you get apple juice. When you squeeze an orange, you get orange juice. So whatever you squeeze, what you get is what is truly within. And then it asked, when you are squeezed in life, what comes out of you? So that was a beautiful and short forward. When I am in a difficult situation, do I exude frustration, irritation and anger? Or do I exude peace, calm and sweetness? What is truly within me is what comes out. That is what is meant by self-evaluation. What comes out of me when I am in that testing situation shows me who or what I am. And therefore we have to work on that sweetness. See, it is not important that we try to clear that unpleasant situation at any cost. The means that we take to resolve that are also important. That is another difference between a worldly test and a divine test. In a worldly test, possibly you can copy and score as good marks as the topper in the class. But with God, it won't work because God knows everything. You know, there's nothing like a secret. You can't cheat in this divine test because God knows everything. I remember on one occasion, Swami appeared to be upset and angry with me, and I felt very, very sad. You see, that is the thing. When Swami gets upset, it's a test, because if He doesn't get upset, I don't do any introspection at all. It's only when Swami is upset that I do my most intense introspection. And so throughout that session, I was introspecting and wondering what had happened, and I was not able to figure out why Swami is upset. So as Swami is returning, I got a chance when He was passing by me, I got up on my knees and I said, Swami, please forgive me, Swami. And the answer that Swami gave really caught me unawares. You know, Swami asked, you want me to forgive you? For which mistake? I said, Swami, for which mistake? Swami said, no, so many are there. Which one are you asking about? Oh, that is when I realized there is no hiding from the Antaryami. Every mistake, everything that I do, He knows already. So there is no need for Him to act upset or be angry with me, test me. Just like in that situation, because Swami got upset with me and I felt Swami is testing me, I started doing so much of introspection. A test is what actually brings out the best from us. And that is why we should, you know, give importance to all of these tests. And when a test comes, you know, when a difficult situation comes, we should give attention to what is it that is coming out of us. What is it that is getting squeezed out of us when we are in this stress situation? Is it good or bad? We get to know what it is. And since we are supposed to cultivate good, the means that we adopt in order to get out of the test also should be good and sweet. Just because I'm in a financial crunch, that is definitely a test from God. It doesn't help if I go and steal or rob somebody. The means that I adopt to get out of the test and clear that problem to come at a solution should be dharmic. Unlike in a worldly test where in an examination you are supposed to be righteous and not indulge in unfair means. But even if you copy, there are chances that you may succeed and come out with a good rank. But with God's tests, that is not the case, because God knows us through and through, in and out.
Exactly, and it's again going back to that same point of, you know, where the effort and the feeling which is most important. And that is why introspection, as you said, plays a very, very important point in this whole picture. I'm reminded of what one of the old students shared. He was a bhajan singer, and I think this is something which you would come over again and again, and many, many students will share about, you know, that lean patch when they're out of form and Swami doesn't talk to you. Mm-hmm. You go into that invisible state. Swami looks at you but looks through you. You've never spoken to. Every student would have at least some period in their stay with Swami, physical stay in Swami's presence, to talk of something like that. And that is actually one of the most powerful make or break situation for most of them. And this student was sharing how he was a bhajan singer. And in fact, he became a bhajan singer because Swami encouraged him to sing bhajans. And Swami gave him so much of attention, and literally the talent blossomed because of the attention he was getting from Swami. And really a purple patch was going on. And all of a sudden, Swami just stopped talking to him. And Swami wouldn't look at him. Swami wouldn't come to the side where he was sitting. And, you know, to make it more obvious, everybody starts noticing that Swami is not talking to you. People avoid sitting next to you because that's when you don't get noticed too. You know, your outer form gets rubbed off the person sitting next to you. Eventually, the teacher in charge of bhajans, he tells him that, you know, don't sing. Why don't you take off for a few days? It doesn't look... Every time the mic gets to you, you see Swami getting up and taking aarti. You know, such things start happening. So this boy was very, very low. And this lasted for, can you imagine, 9 months. And that's a long time. It's almost a year. You spend about 5 years as a student, and 1 year is a long time to lose, close to 9 months. It was one day when bhajans were going on, and he was not allowed to sit with the bhajan group. So he came and sat in the old students' block, you know, where the car garage is. So he was sitting there, and bhajans were going on. And that's when it started, the introspection. It was going on. He said, Swami, why are you doing this? There was no reason why you started talking to me. There was no reason why you gave me so much attention. But why you've taken... I've not done anything wrong in the span of these 9 months for you to treat me like this. And as he was thinking of all these things which have happened and whatever he was going through, then suddenly a thought came, you know. And I think that is Swami's grace. When you really... wanting to get out of it, and as you said, you want to do it in the right manner. It's not hook or crook. You really want to see what is wrong and sort it out. And that's when Swami gives that spark. And it suddenly occurred to him, he said, Swami, when you were talking to me, when you were giving me all the attention, when you were, you know, in the crowd of 400, 500 students, you were picking me out and giving me attention, I felt so much love for you in my heart. Okay? And now when you're ignoring me, why am I not feeling that same love? Which means, did I base my love for you all this while on the attention that you're giving me? Now when you're not talking to me, now when you're not, you know, giving me the opportunity to sing for you, why am I still not feeling that same joyous love which I had that time when you were talking to me? Which means I've based my love on something which is wrong, which is ephemeral. So he said, why can't I sit here and sing for you? Why do I need a mic in front of me to sing for you? Why should I think that only if I have a mic that I'm singing for Swami and Swami is listening to me? And he sat there and he said, yes, Swami, I want to truly love you, not based on what you do externally outside. Whatever be the situation, you talk to me, you don't talk to me, you give me, you don't give me, I'm still going to love you. And even as that thought came, as though the, you know, the test was passed and finally the examination was through, because Swami immediately came out of the bhajan hall, came and stood near the slope there, looked at this boy and called him.
Wow.
And there was no acknowledgement in words. This was all. Swami called him and patted him, and Swami said, how are you? And spoke to him for 2 minutes. He broke down, of course, and then walked away. I think that's what that introspection is, the boon which a test like this gets you through. And, you know, if you look at this boy, I think that boy always loved Swami. It's not like he did not love Swami during that period of 9 months or something. It was just to bring that out from within. Because, you know, all the while there was something artificial. You thought that you love Swami because of these things. And only when put through a situation which was like that, a churning process, you yourself discover that your love for Swami is deeper than what you thought all the while.
2 years back, the students of the university brought out a movie, 1 hour long movie called Ehsaas.
Mm-hmm.
Ehsaas means the experience. And in that movie, they showed as to how, basically I'll just summarize that movie because it is relevant here. In that movie, it's about all the students in the hostel discussing, what do we do now? Swami has left physically. For whom do we go to Mandir now? For what do we do the sports meet? You know, the reason for our existence is now gone. That is when they say, no, Swami will be there. And there is one of these students who is very enthusiastic, very energetic, and he's the one who inspires everyone. He's always there to help. He's always there to guide. Everything happens. And towards the end of the movie, I think this is a spoiler alert. This movie, Ehsaas 1, has been uploaded on YouTube. In spite of the spoiler, you watch it, it'll be beautiful. Where they realize, you know, that this boy is actually Swami who has come in that form. You know, in the form of, coincidentally, that boy's name is Prem. So throughout the movie, they keep telling Prem, 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 Prem. And at the end of that, Now they brought out Ehsaas 2. In Ehsaas 2 yesterday, that was the same thing, you know, where this student is now charged up, supercharged up, because he feels nobody can separate my Swami away from me, because Swami has come to me as Prem. It's very nice that they selected the name Prem, because only love, Prem is love, and only love can substitute Swami. And now, this Ehsaas movie was all about how in different situations he calls out to Prem, and Prem doesn't turn up.
Mm-hmm.
Each and every moment he is let down again and again, again and again, again and again. And he says, Prem, what are you doing? You were there last year when I needed, now you are not there at all. And here I will not give any spoilers, you better watch it, it's so beautiful. But it boils down to this fact, that in the end, the protagonist of the movie ends up on a higher level, on a higher plane of peace, on a higher plane of joy, than he started out before all these traumatic times. It proves beyond doubt that all the pain that destiny threw at him were actually Swami's love in different manner, so that it helps him move faster towards what any soul in the universe seeks, which is peace, tranquility and happiness. So the movie was also the same, and that's what you have also said, that every time Swami's test, it brings on an introspection which leads to a betterment of situation, always without exception.
Absolutely. I think one of the elders who's talking to me, he made a mention of this, you know. Initially, when you come to Swami, he will help you make your decisions and he will come to your guidance. And that will be the test. How hard do you pray? Are you able to pray hard enough to draw his presence? And, you know, in situations when it's very tough, you pray very hard. There are many, many ways. I know some boys were saying that they would go and clean the toilets. That's a way of telling Swami that how much they want Swami to come and guide them. And some people might go and do pradakshinas around Ganesha. Some people might fast. They won't eat properly and all kinds of things. Only to show a means of expressing your intensity. And then Swami would come and guide. And then there would be a point where the guidance would not come physically. It would come through a dream, or it would come through some subtle manner, where you're going to the next level, you're not dependent on the physical form. But that devotee was saying, then a point will come when Swami will give you guidance of no form. The guidance will not come in any form at all. Because that is a point where Swami is now telling you that have the confidence that whatever decision you're making is Swami's decision. You are not seeking guidance, but you know, when a situation comes, I think yesterday also I was talking to Karunaditi, and she was telling, we had an interview with Charu Sinha, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in one of the interactions which Swami had with her, Swami told her, you're taking too much time to make decisions. And she said, Swami, but I have to, because every decision that I make is going to be a matter of life or death for some people, because she's a, for the listeners who don't know, she's a police officer, she's an IPS officer of a very high rank. And she said, when I'm dealing with criminals, I'm dealing with people who are suspects. So I always have to weigh all the options and think what will happen. And it takes a lot of time. And then Swami told her, I want you to reach that state where you take the decision and feel that it is my decision. At that split second, you have to take the decision and you should know that this is my decision. And if it's a wrong decision, Swami will not allow that decision to see the fruition. And that is the state. And that is why many times, you know, when I used to look back at life, and we all have gone through trials and tribulations, but sometimes you feel so frustrated that there seems to be no end. You get over one, there's peace for some time, then another one comes by. You get over that, there's peace for some time, and something else comes. Mm. Sometimes it's health, sometimes it's financial, this one. And that churning doesn't end at all. And I remember once when I was talking to one of my teachers, he said, yes, that's the whole point. And that's where, you know, when you look at our scriptures, the symbolisms which are shown are very, very powerful. He said, you know, you had the Sagar Manthana scene, which is so many times depicted in the Bhagavatam.
Hmm.
Where it said, the churning process goes on and on. Sometimes the halahala comes out, sometimes the Kalpavriksham comes out, sometimes the Kamadenu comes out. Some good things come out, some bad things come out. But the churning will go on. When will the churning stop? When the Amritam comes out. And he said, even in life, the churning will go on and on till the point where immortality comes out. And that's why, going back to that same analogy of the gold being thrown into fire, till the goldsmith is able to see his reflection in you, that's when actually the trials come to an end.
So dear listeners, that has been the churning process that Prem and me went through. I'm sure you'll have lots of your thoughts to contribute. You can definitely do that by writing to us at listener@radiosai.org. One thing certainly we can say with regard to Swami's tests is that we need not fear. Two logical reasons why we need not fear is, one cause for fear is uncertainty, and like all worldly exams which judge us based on our results, and results can be uncertain, it is not the case so with Swamis, because we are judged based on our efforts. That is one reason for us not to fear and be happy. The second reason is, irrespective of what we do, Swami goes by our intentions and our feelings. So, intentions and efforts, these are the two things based on which we are evaluated in Swami's tests. And since intentions and efforts both are in our hand, both are totally in our control, there is no need to have any fear or of any uncertainty, because we are not judged based on what we do or the results we produce. And therefore, irrespective of what other takeaway we may have from this discussion, one thing that we can surely take away definitely is, let us not fear Swami's tests. Let us welcome them with a smile, because they are always for our good. As Swami said, idi na manchi kosame, this is for my good.
So that, dear listeners, brings us to the end of this discussion. As Arvind said, if you have any thoughts on this topic, do write to us. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. We always eagerly look forward to your responses, to your comments, to your constructive criticism too, so that you can send us. Till we meet you next week with another topic, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Arvind. We humbly offer this effort of ours at Swami's Lotus Feet.
Krishna, Krishna, koin sang jodo, jo tum todo piya, main nahi todo re, to se preet tode Krishna, koin sang jodo. Krishna kaun sang jodo, jo tum todo piya, main nahi todo re, to se preet tode Krishna, kaun sang jodo, Krishna kaun sang jodo. तरुवर मैं भये पतिया तुम भये सरोवर मैं भये मछिया तुम भये गिरिवर मैं भये छारा तुम भये चंदा मैं भये चकोरा जो तुम तोड़ो पिया मैं नाही तोड़ो रे तो से प्रीत तोड़े कृष्णा कौन संग जोड़ो कृष्णा कौन संग जोड़ो मुरली मनोहर मोहर Murali Manohar Mohan Giridhar Murali Manohar प्रभु जी हम भये धारा तुम भये सोना हम भये सुहारा भाई मीरा के प्रभु जी ब्रिज के बासी सुनो हे गोपाल सुनो हे गोपाल तुम मेरे ठाकुर मैं तेरी दासी मैं तेरी दासी जो तुम तोड़ो पिया मैं नहीं तोड़ू रे तो से प्रीत तोड़ी कृष्णा कौन संग जोड़ू कृष्णा कौन संग जोड़ू
Giri dhar, 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 giri dhar